Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the official EFL podcast. It's another bumper episode coming your way. My first guest and co-host this week is a wonderful Welshman enjoying a little bit of downtime between managerial posts.
It's been relatively strange, but also I've tried to embrace it and to do maybe things that I haven't done before. I mean, last week I had a little break in terms of a holiday. I've never been away in August, so it's one of those things.
And off the back of an absolutely foursome display, we've got the delightful company of a rampant Robin.
Really happy. Yeah, it's obviously still so early. We're 5 games in, so I'm not going to get ahead of myself and think I'm suddenly a world beater. But like I said, it's got some faith in me. I'm hopefully repaying that so far and just continue. I know I'm not going to score 4 goals every game, as nice as it'd be, but as long as I'm giving everything I can for the team and we're getting the results that we need to get, then I'm going to be happy.
And we have a special treat for you this week as Salford City hitman Matt Smith pits his sizeable wits against some pretty decent names so far on our quiz 72 in 72. Of course, it could only be the official EFL podcast. Okie dokie, my first guest this week on the official EFL podcast, my co-host across all of the 3 divisions we're going to be chatting about and our guest later on in the show is Nathan Jones. Nathan, how the devil are we, my friend?
Not too bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. You're the first guest that's asked me how I am, so I do thoroughly appreciate that. Just give us a little insight. It's a period of time when you are between places. It's the start of a new season. You've seen pre-season come and go. You've seen the season start. How does it feel just currently in this kind of waiting period for yourself?
A little bit strange, but I said this, I'm sort of embracing it really. So I'm getting to lots and lots of games. I've been, watching a lot of divisional games, getting to a few clubs to watch a few people work and so on and enjoying some downtime really. And as I said, I live in a nice part of the world as well. So I'm enjoying certain aspects of that. But no, look, I'm just waiting for the right opportunity that I can take to get back to work, because ultimately that's what I love doing. That's something I'm very driven to do. But it's been relatively strange, but also I've tried to embrace it and to do maybe things that I haven't done before. I mean, last week I had a little break in terms of a holiday. I've never been away in August, so it's one of those things.
And was it as busy as everyone says? It's carnage, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, but yeah, it was nice. It was nice to get away and do a few things and stuff. So look, it's one of those things. So as I said, I've embraced part of it, even though it's been kind of strange.
Good to hear, my friend. And knowing you like I do, I'm sure it's a period of reflection and education and self-reflection, and it will all stand you in good stead when you step back into the madhouse, as will inevitably happen. And speaking of the madhouse, let's get straight into the Sky Bet Championship. Top of the league so far, leading the way. Leicester winning all 4 of their league games. They've got a very good squad. They've got a manager who works under Pep Guardiola. They've got parachute payments. It all looks very, very straightforward on paper. Should this be the case? So far, so good for Leicester.
Look, in theory, yes, but as is shown in, historically, Premier League clubs that come down don't always hit the ground running and not always got that magic formula to return. Some have done it regularly, like some Norwich and in previous seasons, so I think people like West Brom. But no, I don't think it's a given that they have to be up there. I think Leicester have got a good group, because they have. I know a lot of the players there. Good groups, so whatever division they're playing, they'll work hard. And then obviously a talented group, because they've did well at Premier League level. Manager coming in, look, we'll have new ideas. It'll be fresh. You think coming from where he's come from, he'll definitely get a little uplift in initially. And then I think over time we'll see the true Leicester. But right now I think they're an excellent side. Got some really wonderful players, some real good young players. And at the minute they're playing well.
The rest of the top 6, Norwich second, Birmingham, Southampton, Preston, Ipswich. Obviously, a big name that sits in there that you know, that I know, Southampton. How quickly can you move on from a football club and a football job? Because ostensibly it is your career, but you are an emotional manager. It's part of what makes you you and what makes you tick. How quickly can you move on to make sure that when the eyes are on the next job, that you just get on with that next stage of what is hopefully what has been thus far a successful career?
Okay, I think you have to evaluate. I think you have to evaluate the time there. You have to learn from it. I must just then have reflected, have evaluated. I always write my journals and so on. So it's been a big learning curve for me. But as I said, now I've moved on. I've sort of put that side of my or that part of my my career to one side. It was a big learning curve, a real wonderful opportunity, a real good football club. You know, I was grateful for the opportunity. It never worked out as I said, but again, no bitterness in any kind of way. I've learned from that. Now I'm ready for the next challenge. And as long as I use that experience for the good in the next role, then that's all you can do. So it's not necessarily by looking back. I've done that. I've reflected. I've evaluated things I would have done differently, things I could have done better. And then now I'm ready for the next challenge. And I think that's all you can do is in a career.
We spoke to Kieran McKenna last week on the podcast, ahead of the game against Leeds United, of course, a goal-laden game at Portman Road. And Kieran was very magnanimous to say that they weren't going to get carried away. Maybe a sense of a turning point, potentially for Leeds United, possibly in the league at least. But being at a club like Luton, like yourself, which does and has climbed, and you've been part of that climb, when everyone sees Ipswich top of the league doing well and saying, well, they'll be fine, they've got a chance to bounce up the two divisions. I mean, just how hard is that and how much of a challenge would that be for Kieran and his team?
First and foremost, they will be fine. Mm. Like they've got a good structure there. He's had a bit of time there now. They've recruited well. They recruited really well in League One. Probably a too good a squad for League One, really. Even though they didn't win it, and that was to do with a fantastic achievement that Plymouth did. They've gone into the Championship and handled it very, very well. Look, will they win it? With respect, I don't think so, because it's some big sides and sides that will be real consistency with quality. But they'll be fine. He's done a fantastic job there. You know, it's a big football club. They play in a certain way, and it's good. I watched them a lot at League One, and they were excellent, especially towards the end of the season. I watched them play Luton in pre-season, and they were excellent in that. And then they're just handling themselves with real comfort in the Championship. I think they've acclimatised very quickly. But if you look at their players, you know, look at Sam Moores, you look at Connor Chaplin, these have all played at Championship level. Then the boy Burgess and Wolfenden, again, they've played. So they've got a good squad. They've got a squad that will be able to handle the level above. And that just shows good recruitment. Plus good management, because he's done fantastically well. Mm-hmm. The way they play, the way they are, very level-headed guy. Obviously being at big clubs as well, so learned. They'll be better than fine, to be fair.
Speaking of needing to be better than fine, right now there's a bottom three of Borough, Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday pointless at the moment. They lost to Mansfield in the Carabao Cup as well. Three big clubs. Obviously, you've got one club in there in Sheffield Wednesday that came up by the playoffs last season. What's your thoughts on those three so far? Because I presume, looking at them, you see Borough getting into the playoff semi-finals. You saw Huddersfield revitalised under Neil Warnock. Have we got three different clubs with three different sets of aims there for you in the bottom three at the moment?
Absolutely. You'd think from the outside, internally, look, you know, we might be wrong. Middlesbrough would be fine. Middlesbrough are a good side. They've got a good manager. They've got good players. They have a good way of playing. They lost some real potency over the summer, you know, in terms of the boy Ramsey, in terms of Cameron Archer, and then Chubar Akpom. That's a lot of goals, a lot of entertainment, a lot of attacking options that they've lost. They haven't quite replaced those yet. But with the structure they have, the way they play, the fluency, with the experience in house, and especially the back four, it's an extremely experienced back four. They'll be fine. Neil went in last year and did borderline miraculous in terms of where they were to keep them up. And then obviously from that uplift that he got, look, whatever issues were there last year, probably still there in terms of the squad, in terms of certain stuff. So he has to get those going again. But I don't think either one of us are going to sit here and tell Neil Warnock what to do in
terms of anything.
One wouldn't dream of it anyway, but two, the experience, you know, it would be futile, because the experience, the know-how, the nous and everything he has, I'm sure he'll get results. Now, Sheffield Wednesday could be, you know, something different. They came up, they had a real good season last year under Darren Moore. You know, they signed players to get them out of League One. Now, then with a new manager coming in, implementing a new shape, a new way of playing, obviously a new culture because of there is different culture mm-hmm. in terms of Darren and a foreign coach coming in. That's at the minute what they haven't quite hit the ground running. They're going to need results quickly. They are, because it's, you know, you can't get cut adrift at the bottom of the championship because it is a brutal league. Plus then it doesn't help them losing in the cup because that doesn't look bad. And even in the previous round against Colchester, they actually drew and went through, I think, on penalties as well. So at the minute, they haven't quite hit the ground running. But, you know, the manager has to be given time because he's implementing something different, I would imagine. And they have enough experience in that changing room as well to be able to get results because it's a very, very experienced side, the Sheffield Wednesday have.
Okey-dokey, plenty of time for those three teams to put their seasons right. Top of League One, Oxford United. Second, Exeter City. Would you have put money on that before a ball was kicked?
I'm not a gambling man anyway, being a Christian. And the EFL rules and everything. But
I stand corrected. You are correct, yes. My friend.
but you know, if hypothetically we were talking about it, it's probably not. Mm. But when you look at, you know, both managers had a little bit of time now. You know, they took over clubs last year, but they've had a little bit of time. So of course, they're going to be better. They're going to have a little bit more continuity. Oxford probably slightly underachieved in recent weeks. They've always been close under Carl. They were always close to getting promoted. Obviously lost to Wickham in the COVID final, if you like. So you always fancy them to be in and around it. So the fact they're up there is not a surprise. Whether they can sustain it, it'll be another thing. Exeter, for example, have always been a fantastically run club. I read an article the other day where it said that their conveyor belt is running out a little bit at the minute, so they have to really reset and go again, which has been the foundation of that football club. And you look at some of the players that have gone from there, Ollie Watkins and people like that. They've always produced players. Obviously, Josh Key's now gone to Swansea, so they have produced players. They're going to have to keep doing that. But for them, I think without second guessing anyone at the football club or again, you know, being disrespectful to them, if they have a real season where they are nowhere near relegation, I think that's a real good thing, a real good season for those, because, you know, there's always that fear of going down. In recent years, they've gone between League Two and League One. Whereas if they can establish themselves at League One and then kick on from there, I think that's a good season for them.
Oxford have beaten Barnsley, they've beaten Derby, they've beaten Charlton as well. That game against Charlton being Dean Holden's last game in charge of the Addicts. He took over in December. We're not even at the end of August, are we? And all the good work done in pre-season, all the work done thus far. It's been tricky so far, of course. If you're a Charlton Athletic fan, we don't need to tell you that. The great commodity, the great currency, having the pleasure of speaking to people like yourself, Nathan, is that a manager needs is time and patience. From what I've seen, a handful of games into the season, we're not in September yet, doesn't strike me as that long a period to get your ideas across. What's your thoughts?
No, look, I think in isolation, it's a tough one to take, you know. Obviously, they would look at it as five defeats on the spin. Are they moving in the direction that they want to? I think there's been new takeover there, which is, I think, sort of rejigged their ambitions slightly. I know Dean well, obviously been a real good assistant at a spell at Bristol City, and again started well and didn't last there. So I think you know, he's probably been a little bit harshly artly dealt there. Obviously did well last year. Would like to have kicked on now, I'd imagine. It's very, very early. We all want time as managers. Dean hasn't been given that. And look, you, without knowing the ins and outs, you think, is it premature? You probably think it's on an early stage, you know. But in terms of losing away at Exeter, it's a tough place to go. Exeter, I know the ground, and if I know it's been redeveloped, it's a tough, you know, it's a tough place to go. We've always had real good battles down there in my times when I was a player and as a thing. So look, Dean would see that as harsh, but I'm sure what he did last year would stand him in good stead.
And Dean Hilton, of course, one of the good guys in all of this. So we wish him all the best with his next move. A time to reflect, as you were saying, Nathan, earlier on. A big game from that division as well. Bolton taking on Derby. Both teams, Bolton, of course, are in the playoff places. Derby not quite there as yet. Big expectations on both of those. Let's go into League Two. Gillingham, before the start of the weekend, they were perfect across the board. They were maximum points. So, of course, they played Colchester, who had no points and got turned over 3-0. So that, in essence, is what the EFL's about, Nathan, isn't it?
Absolutely. And look, it's the honesty about it, because that result, I always love the EFL, the English leagues, because that could be, at the end of the season, Gillingham, if, for example, Gillingham were a promotion team and Colchester were a mid-table side, nothing to play for, that result can happen on that thing because of the honesty of the league. And then when you, obviously, just after pre-season, early in the season, Neil's done a fantastic job there, had a bit of time, had a tricky start because he came into an environment he felt he needed to change. Now, you know, Neil's very good at what he does. Chop, you know, he gets sides working hard. You don't want to play against a Neil Harris side week in, week out. And I think he's now got a squad there that can really, really challenge. But as you said, Colchester, young squad, young. So that at any point of any day, results can happen. And that's what we see in the EFL. Does it surprise me? The result on the day surprises you, but historically anything in the EFL can happen. So it doesn't surprise you at all.
Honourable mentions, of course, to MK Dons, who now sit top under Graham Alexander, level on points with Gillingham. Third, Accrington, Notts County getting along with their work very quietly and efficiently indeed. Salford, of course, beating Leeds United in the Carabao Cup. Let's look at Doncaster Rovers. As at the time of recording, they're going to play Everton in the Carabao Cup. Now, they're propping up the division. Things haven't gone great so far, just 1 point from 5 games. In a game against a Premier League team, Nathan, there's that cliche about it being a free hit. Is it a good way of garnering some form of confidence, some form of kind of life about the place to push them into the league form? Is that what you're looking for in a game such as that?
I don't think there's any such thing in football as a free hit because if you play an opposition that you expected to lose from, it's about, well, making sure you don't. Mm-hmm. Get embarrassed, for example. Yes. Like playing Man City is a free hit, you think, because you're thinking, well...
the only one that counts.
yeah, you know what I mean? But you get done 7-8, 9-0, and, you know, you're in a bit of trouble. Mm. So there's no such thing as a free hit. Mm. Now, both sides haven't had the best start, so it'll be an opportunity for both sides to put on a performance and get a result. For Everton, they'll... No, it's a must-win game in terms of stuff. Even this early, but it is a must-win game, really. Not for pressure, I think, but just for morale, I think, and around that, and especially the speculation, media hype around it. For Donny, I think it's a chance to put on a performance. They've conceded a few goals, and they wouldn't want to do that at home today, even though, as you said, it is against Premier League opposition. So they'll want to put on a good performance. They'll want to do something like a Salford did. Last night, want to do something like a Plymouth did against Crystal Palace, where they really take them to a game, and that will stand them in good stead. That will, you know, increase confidence and so on, because I'm sure they're going to be fine. Grant's a very, very experienced manager, knows the club, knows the level, and knows how to get results at the club and at the level. So look, I'm sure they'll be fine. And again, we go back to the Dean Holden thing. You know, you can't knee-jerk or anything yet. It's 5 games. A lot can happen. Come off the back of pre-season. Mm-hmm. Your fixtures in the first few games. You can be unlucky with... You get drawn a couple of away games. Teams that are playing well and so on. Teams that have hit form. So there's a lot of things that can happen. You judge teams over 10 games. If 10 games you haven't won a game, then look, you're in trouble.
You've mentioned about doing slightly different things in August because of the current position you find yourself in. Does that also mean that come the end of August, when things are going crazy, your phone's ringing off the hook, it's the last day, people are coming in and out, deadline day is well and truly in full swing, does that mean now you can just sit and enjoy it, maybe watch it on Sky Sports as it tickers through and you see who goes where? Will you miss certain parts of it? What's it like as a manager, that crazy day?
If I'm honest, and I said I don't want to be a party pooper here, but when, for example, I took my time at Luton, we always done a recruitment really, really early and very rarely signed anyone on deadline day. We had one crazy window once where we picked up a few injuries against Wickham the night before, and we went out and had to sign one or two to give us that push to get promoted. But normally we do. It's a real placid day for us, and it has been for me there. Last year when I was at Southampton, deadline day meant that we were playing in the Carabao Cup semi final against Newcastle. We signed Sulemana and Paul Onuachu, and we had to. We were race against time because where they were, we had to get them to Paris. We had to, and it was a different world there. You had to fly them to Paris. You had to get them to do their medical, to then fly them back over to get the paperwork signed so that they were eligible for the deadline. So it can be crazy, but I've always found that if you do your recruitment real early, then all that's left on deadline day is to one, fend off bids for good players, because we always did have that at Luton, and then sit and watch the madness unfold. And it is entertaining the way Sky do it, and the way it is, you know, it is wonderful to see that, and it is quite an entertaining day.
All part of the fun, of course. Right, Nathan, that first part has been wonderful. You've been great. You deserve a little sit down, a cup of tea, and I'll hoover you back up the other side of this.
Hi, I'm Matt Smith, and this is the 72 in 72. Sunderland, Middlesbrough, Hull, Lincoln, Grimsby, Doncaster, Sheffield Wednesday, Huddersfield, Harrogate, Salford, Stockport, Accrington, Bolton, Wigan, Barrow, Carlisle, Tranmere, Port Vale, Stoke, Coventry, Birmingham, West Brom, Notts County, Mansfield, Wickham, then we'll go Norwich, Ipswich, Colchester, we'll go Charlton, Millwall, Gillingham, Sutton, Wimbledon, QPR, then we'll go Exeter, Forest Green, Southampton, Leeds, now I'm getting stuck.
Wowzers, so he smashed that one out of the park, didn't he? Matt Smith goes straight to the top of the 72 in 72 leaderboard with that fantastic score of 38, ahead of John Coleman and Mark Albrighton, with Gary Rowett and Stuart Dallas propping up the early season table. Anyway, let's move back to today's podcast and our very special guest for this final part between myself and Nathan Jones. Now, Nathan, I thought I'd get someone on that knows all about scoring goals, that's part of a football club that knows all about scoring goals. And when you've smashed four in the last league game, then Jake Young, you absolutely fit the bill. How are you, my friend? Thank you very much for joining us.
No worries. Pleasure to be here. Not a bad weekend. So feeling good still. Not quite settled in, but good weekend.
It's a wonderful understatement to say it was a good weekend. Because, I mean, for a portion of that game, it seemed relatively close. But let's say it's safe to say the second half, you boys completely ran away with it. When you are in a game such as that, is there a feeling on the pitch that something special is going to happen?
I think first half, first 20 minutes was a basketball game. There was a big donut in the middle of the pitch, just about 30 yards of space, and it was carnage really, end to end. So I think it could have been probably 2-2, 3-3 after 20 minutes, and then it settled down a little bit and we got a bit more control. We got the goal 1-0, went in at half-time 1-0. Probably, yeah, like I said, a lot of chances. Deserved the lead, just, I'd say. And then obviously had a chat and figured out what was going wrong in certain aspects. So I've come back out and, yeah, we just kind of blew them away. Played the quality we've got. I mean, we've got the potential to do that. And I think it just, that second half especially, it just clicked. And that summed us up. And it was a really good second half performance. So if we could play every game like that 45 minutes, I think we'll be all right.
It goes to show, Nathan, doesn't it, just how important a manager can be at halftime? Because obviously whatever Michael Flynn said has solved the problem.
I was literally just going to ask, what did Flinny say to you at halftime? The magic words, you know, the magic waffle, knowing Flinny, that he would have said at halftime.
That was a lot of instructions. Obviously just needed to be a little bit more careful with the way we play. We're exciting, we get the bodies forward, we do try and kind of get on that front foot, but I think there was, on the turnovers and stuff, we were maybe a little bit exposed, so it was kind of thinking about that. Second balls was the big thing. We were pressing, so when they ended up kind of flipping one in, Our centre halves were winning the headers, but there was quite, like I said, a lot of space in there. So we just landed on that second ball. It was simple stuff, really. It wasn't nothing kind of too technical. It was just land on the second balls, keep doing what we're doing going forward, and it's going to be all right. We'll work. And yeah, it did. Obviously, got the midfielders kind of a bit deeper, dropping on those second balls, and just went and expressed ourselves going forward. Did the patterns that we worked on all week, and yeah, paid off.
The key part of what you see from the early season Swindon Town, from particularly the game at the weekend against Crawley, and everything that you read about yourself and Dan Kemp, there's a real togetherness there. You talk about settling in. He's settling in as well. Watching the game, I mean, he is very evidently looking for you. You look for each other. Is that something that's just come naturally? Is it something that you've worked on? Is it something to do with the fact that he feeds you dry chicken pasta before game?
I've done your research.
So, I mean, average cook, but great with assists and goals.
we were having a chat last night. It was my turn to cook last night, so we had a little bit more flavour in there, which blew his head off. Talk about a game Saturday and just in general, like, we feel like we played with each other for a long time. He was saying, like, even for my goals and his at the weekend that I set up, he said, like, can't really remember, like, calling for it. Can't really remember kind of, he said he can't remember, like, looking up and seeing me. He just knew that I was going to be there for the two that he set me up. Which, yeah, it's good. Obviously, I've never played with each other before. We're four games in and we're feeling like that. It's hopefully only a sign of things to come. But yeah, it's a really good football, enjoying playing with him and Chaz and all the other lads. But yeah, hopefully if we can, me and him can continue linking up, then stats will keep going up and we'll be in a good position coming into the season.
And do you feel like that relationship off the pitch is helping you on the pitch to have that understanding? Because there's famous partnerships done, you know, with Dwight York and Andy Cole, and they were good friends off the pitch and so on and so forth. And do you feel that's helping you to have that understanding on the pitch?
Yeah, 100%. We discuss in an evening and stuff, and when we're there, just about each other's games and getting to know each other and about his career and stuff like that. And without realising it, it will play a significant part in transition onto the pitch. And like I said, we know where each other's going to be without realising too much. Know what he's going to want when he's on the ball and vice versa. So I think, yeah, it's good. We're enjoying playing together at the minute and hopefully can continue to thrive and link up well.
And reading the manager's comments, Jake, with regards to yourself and Dan there for the season, does that help you in a sense of it feeling like home? Obviously, you had that spell at Barrow earlier on this year, the end of last season. Are you in a position now, 22 years old, given the clubs that you've been at, where you want to get your feet under a table somewhere? You want to show people exactly what you can do, because thus far into the season, that's exactly what you've done.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, as a pro player, you've got to have that confidence in yourself. I'm not here by luck. I know I am a good player, and obviously, like everyone in their careers, you have up and downs. Last season for me, probably personally, wasn't obviously where I wanted to be. I had a couple of good years at Forest Green, obviously won the league, and that was a good experience. And last year I was looking at it as a year to kind of kick on personally and show really what I'm about. And for several reasons, obviously didn't quite happen. So I think that now I'm at a place where I do feel like I can do that, and just starting to show now what I am about. So I think I'm really happy here. It's obviously still so early. We're five games in, so I'm not going to get ahead of myself and think I'm suddenly a world beater. But like I said, got some faith in me. I'm hopefully repaying that so far and just continue. I know I'm not going to score four goals every game, as nice as it'd be, but as long as I'm giving everything I can for the team and we're getting the results that we need to get, then I'm going to be happy just being on the pitch and playing my part in that.
Nathan, I'm sure you'll agree with me here. Having spoken to Jake for just a few minutes and a little bit before we came on air, obviously we can't replicate any of that because it's all terrible stuff that's got to stay where it's got to stay. But that confidence that a striker has with scoring goals, you played against me. I was never a goal scorer. I just messed around in the middle of the football pitch trying to kick people like you that were way too quick. That's a different story altogether. But confidence, working your way in a squad a player coming in wanting to prove himself. How do you manage? How would you manage someone like Jake? Because to me, he strikes me, and I know he's in the room, I know he can hear us, and I'm not being remotely condescending when I say this, is a professional that has got his head screwed on and knows where he wants to go. How would you manage a Jake Young?
Well, first and foremost, obviously, when you sign someone on loan, you have to know about them. So you have to specifically want them for a certain reason. This is why I want you to come to our football club. This is what you're going to do at our football club. If you respond the way we do, then you will score goals. Now that, I'm sure, as he's done and it's happened. And then once they're there, you have to show that faith in them, because he's right. You know, he seems a very level-headed lad in terms of everything. Has a little bit about him in terms of confidence, but he's not always going to score four goals. There are going to be times when he goes a game or two without scoring, and it's showing that faith, that real sort of confidence in him that then transcends to him, so that he can go out and feel, no, I'm wanted here, I'm respected here, and I'm improving. And the big thing about him, when people go on loan, whatever it is, whether you come on from the Premier League, whether you come from the Championship, or you come to a fellow League Two club, it's the fact he's coming there to improve, to get better, and then to improve the environment and the football club. And I'm sure, the impact he's had immediately will stand him in real good stead.
And that sense of the togetherness that comes from watching Swindon Town play at the moment. Are you feeling that from the fans as well, Jake? That must be a wonderful feeling when you are the man that's in a rich vein of form and people are singing your name. That's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. There's no feeling like it. I'm coming off after scoring four goals to a standing ovation of a full stadium, 10,000 at Swindon. It's a good, special feeling, one that you dream of when you're a young lad, and I'm trying to become a footballer. It's what you think of. So, yeah, really special. It's a massive club. Obviously, one of the biggest in the league was at Bradford, which is similar. So it wasn't kind of a shock playing in front of a bigger crowd at this level coming here, which probably helped. Definitely enjoy the bigger games and the bigger crowds. So, yeah, just loving it, really. The fans, the staff, the players, it's a really good environment and place to be at the minute. And definitely feel like we can have a successful season with the people we've got in the building, and hopefully get more fans through the gate and get them enjoying watching Swindon.
What is a successful season then for Swindon? Do you have the benchmarks that you set where you are now in the dressing room? Do you say something different in public from a PR? What's your aims?
Look, everyone wants promotion. It's a big club. We've got good players here. Of course, that is the ultimate goal. But it also is for every other team in League Two, probably. So we're not. It's not going to be handed to us. It's a long season. You got to earn it. But like I said, I mean, being in a team that's been in the playoffs at Forest Green and won the league at Forest Green, I've got a rough idea of what a successful squad looks like. And 100% within the first week here, I thought it feels quite similar to that. Here with another lad that was at Forest Green with me, and we were having a chat the other day, and it was kind of, it feels quite similar. It feels like we've got a big chance here. But like I said, it didn't just happen overnight. It is one that we're going to have to work for.
Swindon's one of the biggest clubs, as you said, in that division. It's been a real historical club. It's played in all four, played in the Premier League, the Championship, League One, League Two. I mean, Prutz has played. I've played at playoff semis against Swindon. And it is a club with real good fan base, with good tradition, recent tradition in terms of everything. Do you feel any extra pressure this year? Because at other clubs, it's not that. If you overachieve and it's not easy, but it's not as much sort of pressure on you at Swindon. Do you feel that pressure to get promoted?
It's a tough one. I think that the more fans you have, it doesn't mean that you're just entitled to promotion and being a good team. You look at Stevenage last year, probably didn't get too many fans in attendance and stuff, but they're like one of the best teams in the league, and they've gone up. So it's not an automatic thing. Oh, they've got loads of fans. They're a massive club. They've been higher before, so they should be going up. But of course, the fans have seen the club in a better place than League Two, so they will be looking at it thinking we shouldn't be in this league and stuff. But ultimately, they are, and we're here to get them out of it, and that is the goal. But like I said, it doesn't mean that it just happens because we've got a lot of fans. It makes it a lot more special when it does happen. We see that. I remember playing here a couple of years ago when they needed I think 3 points to get in the playoffs, and there was probably 12,000-13,000. It was a Tuesday night game, and it was a really good atmosphere. And yeah, I mean, I'm playing that thinking that's especially, I'd love to be in that changing room right now. They went and beat us 2-1, so I thought that'd be, it's a great place to be when it's going well. So yeah, of course there's always going to be that expectation from fans, but you can't let it weigh on you too much. We just got to go out there, do our stuff. We've got a lot of experienced lads, a lot of lads that have been played higher, that have got promotions at this level. So I think we're in good stead in that sense. There's no one going to be overwhelmed by being a club of this size and crumble or anything like that. It's just a case of play your football, do what we do, and just, yeah, don't focus too much on the bigger picture and what's going to, the table's going to look like at the end of the season.
I think, as well as you're doing, Jake, I don't think there'll be too many Swindon fans grateful for Jonesy reminding them that I was there for a season, because we were absolutely terrible that particular year. But moving swiftly on, scoring goals is tough. Dealing with expectations is a tough part of being a footballer. The toughest part of being a footballer at Swindon Town is the first time you come across the magic roundabout out near the actual county ground. Five roundabouts in one, if I remember rightly. How did you manage that the first time you saw it?
Just close my eyes straight through the door.
Just hope for the best.
See what happens. Yeah. It's carnage. It's out. Yeah. Interesting. It does somehow work. It does somehow
work.
Been here a little while.
Correct.
Yeah, been here a little while. You get used to it. Just, you can go all the way around the outside of each one. And that's the safe method. Or like I said, straight through the middle, see what happens. But yeah, right outside the ground that is. So I'm doing that at least once a week. So
yeah, so
getting used to it.
It's a test of all of our driving ability. One last one from me, Jake. Are you missing the finest county in England, Yorkshire? I know you're a proud Yorkshireman. Do you get back much?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a couple of years down here. I lived in Swindon before when I was at Forest Green, so I'm not a stranger to the area and the journey back up, which is a bit of a rough one. But it's a get back when I can, especially beating team 6-0. We get a little Sunday, Monday off is always nice. And so I'll be back up the M6 then and up to Leeds, kept my place up there and stuff. So get on when I can, see obviously the lads, see my family and stuff. But for me, this is home now. This is home for at least a season. So yeah, just don't go back too often. Obviously, it's a 4-hour drive. Got to look after myself. So yeah, just getting used to the area again. And like I said, I'm familiar with it, so it doesn't feel too strange. And yeah, I like it. Lot to do around here. Lot around the area.
Well, Swindon's got a real good tradition of producing players down the years. Yeah. So we'll definitely keep an eye on you.
Yeah, no, hopefully.
Very, very true, Nath. And so from dealing with one Welshman on a daily basis to one on a podcast, who's been the more favourable so far?
No comment. I'm in trouble either way now.
Don't worry, Jones is not going to say anything about Flinny other than what he said already.
I'm dead already, yeah. Don't worry. Listen, one of them can talk. One of them can talk, and one of them's relatively good looking with a rap face. I'll let you decide.
Decide which one's which. And that's not only for you two here on the podcast, it's for everyone else listening and watching. Chaps, this has been a pleasure. Nathan, as a co-host, have you enjoyed yourself?
Yeah, very much so. Thanks. It's been real good. As I said, always nice to chat football, and especially when you're out and about watching games, and to see that beautiful face of yours looking like a young Hugh Jackman. And as I said, wow. I wish you all the best to Swindon, and hopefully you continue that scoring form, because it's a good club. Got a lot of friends down there, and it'd be good to see Swindon doing well.
Yeah, Jake, you've been wonderful, mate. Thank you so much for your time. And of course, who have you got this weekend?
We're away at Doncaster.
And given what the Football League's like.
Yeah.
We wish you all the very, very best. Keep up the goal scoring exploits, and we will keep a keen eye, my friend. Thank you both for joining us on the official EFL podcast. Well, that was very enjoyable, wasn't it? Good guys all round. That's about it for this episode. A big thank you to Jake Young, Matt Smith, and of course my co-host this week, Mr. Nathan Jones. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share on all of your socials. If you're listening to the audio-only version of this podcast and haven't as yet seen us in full, glorious Technicolor, then you can watch this on YouTube. All the episodes are on the EFL's YouTube channel right now, including this one, so go and give us a gander if you haven't done so already. My name is David Prutton. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.